This is a Dynamike Network podcast.
Welcome, welcome back to Max Destruction Halloween edition. I am back, of course, as your host with the most, because we're going to go with that. I think I'm way more Beetlejuice than I am Elvira, although right now I could be both. You don't know. My co-host and I have video up, so I'll let him describe what I'm wearing to you slowly if you want. As such, with my host, we are continuing on this train of spooky with a secondary guest host. Would you please introduce yourself, sir?
Thanks for the introduction, Ken. My name is John, or as some people call me, Mad Trivia John. I am the host of the Mad Trivia podcast, and Ken has, I'm sure, reluctantly reached out to me being another Marvel fan. He's got this really bad track record of blaming Dustin for all of the shortcomings of Marvel people appearing on his show. But the truth of the matter is he just loves the punishment that we provide him.
That's fair. I always like to work it in as a challenge. I'll always say that there are two things in life that I love. Carpe the diem, which is seize the carp, and fighting against Marvel fans on my podcasts, because if it were just DC, it would just be a giant hug fest, and really nobody wants to see that. I don't think they'll pay to see that. I think they'd much rather have just the underlying seeding of hatred between the two of us. So Strosky and I have known each other for a long time. You were actually our first interview for Max Destruction, and I'm glad to have you back. We've both been executive producers on the Dynamic Duel for a long time. And we both really kind of restarted, you know, looking at podcasts and doing our own thing right around the same time, I think, when I was rolling You Call Those Tactics. I, of course, have been on Strosky's podcast, where I got absolutely slaughtered in trivia, which was a mad piece of humble pie. So kind of hoping to serve him a big steaming dish of it himself this go around. But we shall see. We shall see. And of course, folks, I'll go ahead and let you know as a programming note, Strosky didn't feel like he could come to this fight alone. So he brought a second with him as a champion. So just in case he goes down in this fight, he can, of course, bring in his second. And I applaud it. I applaud it, sir.
Before you run off of that one, I got to give you this. The tangent that you just gave me the credit for in terms of having a second, totally on par with the character that I'm bringing to this fight.
Definitely, definitely. And thank you for that little segue, as we like to call it in the biz. Who are we fighting today, Strosky?
I believe part of your spooky season was Pennywise the Dancing Clown versus the very bloody, very demonic, very, very pointy Pinhead from the Hellraiser series.
Very, very true, my friend. We are going very spooky, very demonic, and very, we'll go with existential. I think both of these characters really kind of fall in those lines. They're not, as our previous episode was, where you have two guys with pointy things that really just kind of throw themselves at each other. Instead, you have these very creepy guys that show up and do very creepy things to each other, which I think is outstanding. And we will hopefully have a little bit better of a fight. I know we will, just for the simple fact of these two characters can be into pretty much anything that they want. So it's really going to come down to our imaginations, which I know I have not drank near enough to have that great of imagination. So I can't wait to see how this really rolls out. We'll get into that in a few, but this is our second season, my friend, and we are actually rolling back the wham. Strosky has listened to our podcast before, so he is well aware, as he is typically one of my entrants for this little weekly audience matchup, and this, of course, has been Dread Pirate Roberts. I felt a little bit of a pointy end kind of guy for last week, so Strosky, I'm going to read off some and let me know what you think. So first we had a retro comic pod serial killer. He put Robin Hood. It's definitely a Spider-Man meme pointing at each other because he went the Carrie Ells. Joe Garcia threw on Aragorn from Lord of the Rings, of course. Jong 303 threw what's his ass Bill Turner, Orlando Bloom's character from Pirates of the Caribbean. That is the full quote. I appreciate that. A buddy of mine, Jesse Robbins, threw out Antonio Banderas as Zorro. El Gato Especial himself, Puss in Boots. And then finally, Captain Gut from Ice Age. And I think that was the lemur guy with the eye patch, if I remember correctly. From like the fifth or sixth installment. I think I stopped watching at 2. So my children finally were not able to pull me into the theater for the rest. But Strauss, what do you think of those entrants?
So if you go down the sub comments to the Carrie Ellis Robin Hood, you'll see a particular entry from yours truly that says, I came here just to say this and that this is the only correct answer, and I have to completely and utterly agree. Carrie Ellis versus Carrie Ellis, perfect fight. Nothing but puns, nothing but good swords fighting, and absolutely Princess Bride references on both sides.
100%, and I would agree with that. I'd say probably a close second would actually be Bill Turner, just from swordsmanship alone. Zorro, of course, has already been on this podcast, so I'd love to see what goes on. But Robin Hood, Carrie Ellis from, of course, Robin Hood and Men in Tights. He comes as one of the only that can speak with a British accent because, of course, that film came right on the heels of the Kevin Costner Robin Hood Prince of Thieves, which was a terrible Robin Hood movie. An amazing Kevin Costner movie, but just a god-awful Robin Hood film. So, yes, I definitely think that in this we will all agree that Robin Hood would probably be a great addition to this Wham. And stay tuned to later in the podcast when I drop the next week's Wham. Strosky, as my guest, I allowed you to pick who we were going to be fighting and your champion, as it were. So why don't you go ahead and lead us off after Gio talks about the tale of the coconut butter.
Here at the Max Destruction podcast and at the Destruction Deli, we use the tail of the cocoa butter as a measuring device. Think about it like the UFC's tail of the tape. The guys explain their characters' backgrounds, abilities, and equipment. And I use it to measure how many cannoli a person deserves. It's way more macho and 80s action than a stupid standard of measurement, don't you think?
Okay. So as we discussed, we're doing Pennywise versus Pinhead. Battle of the Peas, if you will. I didn't even think about that until just now.
Alliterations, it's all I do, man.
It's the best thing ever. Whole bunch of peas in this fight. So, back in, what was it, 1987, this gem of a horror film, Hellraiser, came out. And it definitely set the standard for a lot of people in terms of horror and slashers and demonic thrillers and whatever you want to describe them as. Everything kind of procedurally rolled off of this kind of a movie. Because, yes, there was Michael, there was Jason, we all know and love Freddy, but Pinhead is just an animal of his own creation. So, Pinhead, also known as Hell Priest, Lead Cenobite, the Pope of Hell, Dr. Paul Gregory, the Engineer, and Cold Man. Doug Bradley played this role to perfection until 2005, and then other actors took over the role. Not really worth mentioning. People will often bring up now the 2022 remake with the female lead. I don't know how you can be the Cold Man if you're not a man. I don't know much about it. I don't hate the idea of race or gender bending in any situation as long as it makes sense. I truly don't think this situation called for the reboot with gender swap. I thought Doug Bradley was great, and he set the precedent, and to change the gender kind of deflates what he created. Not to say that it could have been bad, because I didn't see it. But anyways, back to what we're actually talking about, which is Doug Bradley, because the other ones don't matter and don't exist in this fight. Bradley as Pinhead weighed approximately 160 pounds and was 5'11" when he portrayed the role of Pinhead. Pinhead's real name is Captain Elliot Spencer, a central character in the Hellraiser franchise created by Clive Barker. Everyone knows Clive Barker if you're a fan of horror. If you don't, you're not a horror fan. Plain and simple end of story. Before becoming the iconic Pinhead, Elliot Spencer was a British Army officer who served during World War I. He was a man deeply disillusioned by the horrors of war, which left him spiritually empty. Spencer's quest for meaning eventually led him to the Lament configuration, a mysterious puzzle box. When he solved it, he unwittingly opened a gateway to the Cenobites, otherworldly beings from a dimension where pain and pleasure are intricately intertwined. Spencer's transformation into Pinhead occurred when he willingly subjected himself to the Cenobite transformation. This choice reflected his belief that the sadomasochistic experiences offered by the Cenobites were the only way to achieve spiritual transcendence. Yes. There's nothing else that can be said about Pinhead. His background is riddled with murder, blood, torture, absolute devastation to anything and anyone in his way. In terms of his abilities, Pinhead is the leader of the Cenobites, a group of extra-dimensional entities who serve as both punishers and pleasure seekers. His appearance is striking, featuring nails driven into his bald head in a grid pattern, which earned him his nickname. Pinhead is known for his calm, intellectual demeanor, often quoting philosophical and poetic phrases. His abilities are both horrific and supernatural. With the abilities including the ability to summon hooks and chains from literally nowhere. They don't have a presence from where they came, and they don't have a destination for where they go except for where he sends them. He can call them in from anywhere at any time without any presence of anything whatsoever to stop it. He has the ability to teleport seemingly at will without any question as to where or when he's going to land. It is up to him and him alone where he decides to appear. He is essentially immortal. Cenobites are essentially immortal and impervious to most physical harm unless the box is nearby and I believe resolved. I forget exactly how that worked out, but I think it's resolving the box while he's around. And he's extensively knowledgeable in sadomasochistic rituals and can manipulate them to create grotesque and surreal experiences for those who encounter him. So he's basically a mental manipulator in terms of visions and stuff. So, I think Pennywise has got a little bit of a fight in front of him. I don't think dick kicks are going to work on this round.
You might think so, my friend. However, it's cute that, you know, he believes himself to be a demon or an angel, depending on who they're talking to. Pennywise is an actual god. So we'll see how this rolls, but I kind of can't wait. Before we get into the 100% agree, Hellraiser, it is one of those films that kicks things up a notch. Growing up the way that I did, of course, you know, you're watching RoboCop at 9 in the theaters and stuff like that probably wasn't, you know, the greatest idea for a young budding Ken. However, my insatiable lust for horror films really started with this film. I absolutely loved this film. It was kind of my gateway into The Exorcist and those phantasm, you know, everything above and beyond your simple slasher films. It kicked everything up, to an 11, as Spinal Tap would say. And I absolutely love it. Clive Barker is a genius. I think probably one of the most psychotic geniuses in the world. However, I really love everything that he puts out. You know, if you don't have H.P. Lovecraft, you have Clive Barker. So well done. Well done, my friend. But we'll go ahead and go into probably one of the next tier level horror writers with Stephen King's It, or otherwise known as Pennywise, the Dancing Clown. Of course, he has shown up since 1986 in the novel bearing its name It. There is a ton of backstory. I'm not going to get to go and watch the damn films or watch the original miniseries, which is, I'm sure, yours and my first forays into this character, beautifully played by Tim Curry. Bill Skarsgård did a great job in the newer films. I just don't think you can break Tim Curry out of that role. It's a nostalgia thing, I think, for us more often than anything else.
It's impossible to separate it. It really is.
You're able to bring technology and special effects and like really make the film pop now. But think about in 1990, they didn't have any of that, Jack. So all you had was Tim Curry and really bad stop motion animation. So incredible film, but I digress. So Pennywise the Dancing Clown, also known as Robert Bob Gray, the Dairy Disease, the Eater of Worlds, Librarian, Headless Child, Women in Painting, Flute Lady, Judith Lilith, Infected Leper, Charred Hands, Richie Tozier, Betty Ripsom, Eddie Kesprock, Werewolf, The Mummy, Alvin Marsh, Mrs. Kirsch, The Witch, Georgie Denbrough, Randall Flagg, implied by Stephen King, and The Clown. It is a shape-shifting creature known as a Gallimore, who is billions of years old. Although it's lived on planet Earth for many years, Pennywise originated in a void dimension outside of the regions of space known as the Macroverse. Since Pennywise's true identity is unclear due to its shape-shifting abilities and the being from another universe, its real name and species is also known as Deadlights. Few know this, which is why it is referred to as It. The form of a female spider seems to be Pennywise's true physical form on Earth, or at least that's the closest thing that a human mind can comprehend. Living deep below the fictional town of Derry, Maine, it can morph into any other human, animal, non-human animal, or object, including combinations thereof. This ability is useful for A, appearing as a target's loved ones or friends to manipulate them or lure them into a trap, B, appearing as the target's worst psychological fear. However, it's the favorite and most common form is that of a circus performer named Pennywise the Dancing Clown. As most small children love a clown, and generally, it seems that people in Derry happily accepted the presence of stray clowns, stray circus performer. At the same time, many people are also afraid of clowns, making them an easy fear to exploit. Its real name, if indeed it has one, is unknown. Although several times in the novel it calls itself by Robert Bob Gray, this may be an allusion to the real-life child cannibal Albert Fish, who reportedly used the name Robert Gray as an alias. It may also get its first name from Robert Bob Bell, the man who originally portrayed Bozo the Clown, which I didn't really know until I actually did the background research for this podcast, because I absolutely hated clowns growing up. Again, credit Tim Curry, except for Bozo. Bozo the Clown was legit. I could watch him on the television, but if a clown was anywhere near, it was game on. And I kind of, you know, grew out of that by about 12 because I was 6'1" at that point and pretty much could take care of any clown that I came across. So that fear quickly dissipated. However, you know, Pennywise would have been it for me if Ken was in a horror genre. It, again, comes from a macroverse. This is a concept related to the Toadash Darkness from the Dark Tower novels, of course. So Stephen King built this entire universe and then threw a clown in because that's how Stephen King does. Its timeline for the novel and the films kind of goes back to 1750. But really, basically, it shows up out of its slumber from underneath Derry, Maine, whenever there's a horrific act that occurs, such as in 1908, it awakened after the Kitchener Ironworks explosion, where 102 people died, 88 of them kids, 14 adults. After a bad shootout between rival gangs, the Black Spot is burned down by a cult, awakens to eat kids a year before going into hibernation. So this is, of course, the beginning scene of both the miniseries and the film, when poor Georgie dies by Pennywise biting off his arm and dragging him into the sewers after the little boat goes into the channel. So pretty much any time something catastrophic occurs in Derry, he will show up. In the films and the novel themselves, he typically gets beaten by a group of children because that is his favorite snack. And when this occurs, he will go into hibernation until the next terrible act, which then brings those children back. And, you know, spoiler alert, they win, quote unquote, but can you really kill a god? No, not really. So power and abilities. So he is a lower tier god, which gives him lower tier omnipotence. Has an intense amount of power with that only the turtle Maturin being his equal, and it's only superior. He has telepathy, can detect emotions and memories of an individual, though apparently not thoughts, at least not for those that possess enough courage or willpower. It uses the ability to exploit fears, but also to implant thoughts. He can communicate through the mind and or the fears of those that he is targeting. He has mind control and possession. It can control the minds and actions of a person, several people simultaneously. He has shapeshifting, which I kind of hit on a little bit before, but he can shapeshift into pretty much anything, to include things that should not be physically possible on the earth. He can shapeshift into. He has illusions. He has no limit to what those illusions can be. And not only are they illusions in the visual sense, but they actually change the matter in and around his target, i.e. the blood that shoots out of the sink during one of his illusions. He has invisibility. He is telekinetic. He has psionic abilities. He has some weather control, and he can teleport. Finally, it is invulnerable to a point. He is not invincible. However, he can heal at superhuman rates. In the films, it is stabbed through the head with an iron spike, which merely disorients it, and is able to retreat into the sewer. In the novel, when it manifests in a bird, Hanlon hits the bird's eye and feet with broken tiles. The bird retreats. When Bill and Richie encounter it as a werewolf, it can almost instantly regenerate after being shot in the head with a handgun. It is not a truly physical entity, therefore it cannot be killed or harmed by conventional means. The only way to actually destroy it is through the ritual of Chud, and that can only be done by those that can break apart its fear. Finally, its weakness is really narcissism. It believes that it will win no matter what, and it will be able to eat and continue to destroy as it wants to. So it tends to leave itself open for counterattack quite easily, or they can just run away. Now, I understand that Pinhead thinks that he is some kind of H.P. Lovecraftian angel of pain and pleasure. Again, he's fighting a god, Strauss, so I don't feel like he's going to have too much to go on this one.
Well, you did say a bunch of powers about shape-shifting and you know, illusions and telepathic and whatever. I lost my train of thought after the first thing that you said about him, because he's just a dancing clown.
But not just any dancing clown. He is the floating lights, dead lights dancing clown.
Hey, Kenny. You want to fight?
I can't wait. This is going to be great.
I got to say, you did say he's invulnerable to a point. I said Pinhead is immortal, period. So we'll see how this plays out on your behalf, because I don't think Pennywise is dancing his way out of this one.
See the pun there. That's why I love you, Strauss. So, guys, of course, we don't do anything without Gio explaining how our two characters are going to fight, which is going to be incredibly interesting to see, considering both of these guys really just play on the fears and love and hate and discontent and a lot of leather for some reason. So, Gio, why don't you go ahead and explain to the audience how we are going to get down spiritually and unethically wise for this fight.
Do you honestly think these idiots would be able to put their biases aside to come up with an answer to who would win? Absolutely not. So they did the next best thing. They stole a probabilistic model that a computer can use from the dynamic Dual Jamooks. Using this model, the guys input a character's stats, such as strength, fighting style, and most importantly, humor. They run the model 1,000 times to decide a match. establishment in harm's way, the simulated fight doesn't have any bearing on the results, but I guess to some it's funnier.
All right, thanks, Gio. Of course, we are not going to actually summon these demons because that would be bad, not good. So we are going to do so in an environment, we'll say, like a warehouse, I'd say would probably be best. We'll say that the lament configuration is in Dairy for some reason, because why not? And Pennywise has been chasing kids, and they feel like the only way that they can beat him is by solving the puzzle box. So these two characters are going to show up. Pennywise thinking he's finally got these kids cornered, and Pinhead coming because the box was just solved. Because both of these characters typically are very like into getting involved right away, I'm going to let Pinhead go first.
Oh, you're going to let Pinhead go first, as if him appearing from nowhere with chains spewing in all directions directly at Pennywise without the first thought wasn't going to be what happened anyways.
I mean, that's fine. The chains are going to come, but Pennywise is just going to disappear and reappear right next to the kids, gobbling one up as he comes back into frame, as it were. As he does, he's going to grab one of the chains that seems to just be kind of following him, and he's going to pick his teeth with the chain, laughing and dancing as he goes.
Okay. Pennywise is going to see... Pinhead is going to see Pennywise eating the kid, and he's going to smile a little bit, and he's going to look at Pennywise, and he's going to say, "You think you love pain?" And then he's going to shoot chains from behind, both up and down. So he's got the head and legs caught. Pennywise is now ensnared by Pinhead's chains.
So looking down and kind of up at the chains, you know, Pennywise is going to giggle and that's great. I really love it when they bring their own stuff. And then Pennywise is going to yank himself out of the chains and fall to the ground. But when he comes back up, he is going to assume the identity of the captain's fair XO that just showed up in the tent in 1916 Sicily or wherever the hell he was, pleading that the captain, you know, snap out of it. And at that point, the room shifts and it goes right back to the tent right before the captain becomes Pinhead, with him sitting there with the lament configuration. Everything is exactly as it was. Pennywise is nowhere to be found.
Ah. So Pinhead, or Elliot, is staring at the box. But one thing that a lot of people don't know about Pinhead is when he became Pinhead, all semblance of his normal life were taken from him. So he doesn't recognize this. So instead of thinking himself that he is himself, Elliot, he spawns himself behind the body of Elliot playing with the box, thinking that it is, in fact, just another victim. But Pennywise forgets, or rather, Pennywise doesn't know, that he can also cast illusions and make people see things based on fear. Now, I don't know exactly what off the top of my head what Pennywise's true fears are, but I would have to imagine it's kids with slingshots. So a bunch of kids with slingshots and stones are going to spawn behind the perceived location of where Pennywise is hiding and start torturing him with rocks and stones.
Yeah, I'd say probably just a group of kids in general is what Pennywise fears, because I don't think Pinhead can become a giant turtle with the world on its back. Although that would be pretty interesting. I don't know how the algorithm would account for that, but all right, we'll go with it. So Pennywise shapeshifts back into himself in his clown form, and he's getting pelted with the rocks by these kids, but he can feel that there is no fear coming from them or anything really. So he understands that this is not the same children that would be in around. However, Pennywise still has the box. And he realizes that because Pinhead is being, somehow tethered to this box, doesn't know exactly what's going on, but somehow is tethered to it. Pennywise, instead of solving the box, is going to shift it and mold it into what he wants it to be, which is going to be a horn, like a clown horn. And as he shifts it into it and goes, it's going to blow Pinhead against a wall. His physical body is still there, but his power seems slightly diminished.
Okay. So Pennywise plays with the box and he manipulates it to look like a horn, but what Pennywise doesn't realize is that when you mess the box, if you don't solve it, you can potentially make matters worse and summon more Cenobites. And with that, a disc flies out of nowhere and sticks to the back of Pennywise's head, making him drop the box horn. Since I really don't think I can call it anything else safely. And though he's not a fixture on the fight itself, you'll see that behind Pennywise was the disc Cenobite that looked like he had a bunch of, and actually did have a bunch of CDs blast into his head. I believe circa Hellraiser 3.
No, that was like 4. That was like the worst one. You picked like the worst.
It was one of the later ones.
It was a god awful Cenobite. And just for that now, Pennywise is going to allow the CD to come in and it's going to go into his head like the old school CD players used to. Like the disc will like burn in and then like slowly start moving, and it's Wham! Playing Careless Whisper now all over the place. And George Michael is sitting in the back just really letting it go. And as George like looks over at the disc Cenobite, out of nowhere Pennywise just cracks it dead in the nuts as hard as he can, throwing the Cenobite through the wall and into the outer universe. Pennywise is now starting to understand that this being that he is fighting is definitely not of this earth. However, there's definitely a tie that it seems to be worried for it. So to end this match, Pennywise is going to bring the children back into the room that they're in. And he's going to look at Pinhead and say, "They're all yours, because I'm sure that box is the reason that you're here. Go. Do with what you will." And then he's going to disappear, thus ending the match, because he knows that Pinhead has to kill whatever has, solved the box.
Okay. So Pennywise thinks he's flown off into safety. However, he forgot that he handled the box. He forgot that he shapeshifted the box and attempted to solve it in some capacity, and that makes him also attached to the box. So as he's trying to dissipate and disappear and teleport away, out of the box shoots hundreds of chains in every direction. All the kids, they're strung up, unfortunately, in a horror style, because movies like this don't save kids, generally speaking. So all those kids are strung up, but in the middle of the chandelier of children is the electrical post that is Pennywise's absolutely dripping and pulled apart body, with arms in one direction, legs in one direction, torso in the middle, and then, of course, right on the top, Mortal Kombat style, is the head, still smiling and laughing, because he can't die, but he certainly doesn't have to be put back together.
Until he's ready to. And I think that is a great way of ending the match, Strauss. I think ethereal characters that really can't take any damage is an interesting concept that we have stumbled on upon. And I think we could probably go for at least another hour on weird ways of how we would try to hurt each other. But well done, my friend. I think this is outstanding, and I can't wait to see how our algorithm figured it out, because I don't think we're going to.
No.
Strauss, because we have to go into the damage spectrum next, and I honestly really feel for Geo on
the destruction spectrum, or as I like to call it, the insurance adjuster's notes. The guys take each character's destruction potential and decide on a scale of 1 to 5. Really, it's all about how much damage they do to my deli. Since you guys think it's hilarious, I guess I'll just keep switching insurance companies. There is certain to be a ton in New York, right?
One, because I don't think he has ever had to deal with ethereal characters that want nothing but wanton destruction and carnage. How do you feel like this went for his poor little deli, not in Connecticut? This is definitely downtown Manhattan.
Oh, yes, the original home store. I got you. This is the central location for the franchises.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I don't think his deli stood from this one. I think with all the different changes that Pennywise can make and all the destructive nature that can be caused from such things, along with Pinhead's chains coming from anywhere and everywhere, as well as the fact that those other Cenobites have all different varying abilities and generally speaking are attached to his hip, that deli's floored. I'm going 4 to 5, maybe even solid 5 on this one.
Yeah, so for those of you that don't remember, our destruction spectrum goes from 1, which is kind of like a bar fight, to 5, which is a tantamount to a nuclear explosion occurring in downtown Manhattan. And I would have to say the amount of collateral damage that could likely occur from this fight, if for no other reason that they would get bored of fighting each other and turn and fight everybody else in the tri-state area, it would be a like infinity, I think. I think the world would end at some point. I think this is our first 5, and I am super excited about it, that it is our 2 horror characters that would bring the most destruction. So well done, my friend. Well done. Strosky, I am going to do something I have not done yet, and I'm going to let the guest co-host come up with a win.
Wham.
Character, is there somebody that you would love to see put up for our audience to come up with a matchup?
To the first person that popped into my head for no good reason other than I was thinking like Halloween and spooky stuff, let's go with Shaggy Rogers.
Nice. Now, is this like Ultra Instinct Shaggy, or are we talking about old school Casey Kasem Shaggy?
Matthew Lillard in the live action initial first and second Scooby-Doo movies produced or written by James Gunn. I think that would be the ultimate version to use in a Wham. He's the perfect Shaggy to the point where they actually use him as the voice actor, I think, predominantly now. So
that's outstanding. Shaggy Rogers it is. So of course, folks, please go ahead and vote live on our socials, which of course we're Max Destruction Podcast on Instagram and at Max Destruction Pod on the Twits or the X or the Twix. I don't know. We're gonna go with it.
Twix is a good one.
much funnier. So Strosky, the algorithm being what it is, the winner. You and I both feel very confident in this, so we're going to go ahead and see what it is. The winner of this fight between Pinhead and Pennywise is Pinhead.
Of course, Pinhead won 59-41, and my audience couldn't be happier. Do you hear them? You got to appreciate the love that they have for the right choice being made by a Marvel guy yet again. 59-41. I am actually kind of shocked. It was much closer than that. But at an 18% difference in victories, that is fair enough.
Strosky, I appreciate you coming on. Do you want to plug anything? Upcoming trivia fights? When are you going to have me back on so I can reclaim my honor?
So I'm actually trying to broaden the horizons of the show. I put up a post a couple days ago. I am looking to try to get hosts of podcasts to come on and fight with their niche. So in the case of like you guys, I've put you and Dustin against each other, and I would probably pick from the episodes you have out and come up with trivia based on your show, results, you know, background information on this character's height and weight for this movie, etc. You know, just the things that you guys have already talked about and see if you remember. Mad Lib, I might have to.
That's legit, dude. A little bit, I think that would be cool. I honestly would love to see Joseph and Jonathan go at it with their 300 and some odd episodes, because I know for a fact they can't remember 2 weeks ago. So it would be incredible to watch how badly they would remember their fights. And of course, Dustin and I are just titans of industry, and we definitely remember everything that happened with ours. So I could see that being a great thing. Strauss, I appreciate you coming on, man. This was fun. This is exactly what I wanted between these two fights. I can't wait to see what we do next, but we will definitely have you back on. Of course, guys, go to the Mad Trivia Podcast. Follow John everywhere he is. It is a great pod. Again, humiliating for those that have been on it, but we keep coming back for more because we are masochists at heart, obviously. So appreciate you coming on, dude, and I can't wait to see what happens next. All right, guys. So again, follow us next week. We will be having the Alien Queen versus Predator, because I don't feel like just five drones would be enough to take on a Predator. We're going to go Alien Queen. So if you guys want, go ahead and go back and listen to our first season. We are only getting better. And I appreciate you guys coming on. So with all that, we'll see you next week.